Presenters in this session are going to be discussing progress in adolescent vaccination coverage in the U.S. and recommendations mainly for the targeted adolescent vaccines, meningococcal conjugate and human papillomavirus vaccine, as well as a little bit on Tdap. I just wanted to read a disclosure. CDC, our planners, and the presenters in this session wish to disclose they have no financial interests or other relationships with the manufacturers of commercial products, suppliers of commercial services, or commercial supporters. Presentations in this session will not include any discussion of the unlabeled use of a product or a product under investigational use, with the exception of Amanda Kahn, who will discuss off-label ACIP recommendations for meningococcal conjugate vaccine. There's no commercial support for this activity. So our Shannon Stokely is our first presenter. She has been with NCIRD since 1996, and beginning in 2006, she became the lead for the adolescent immunization team in the Health Services Research and Evaluation Branch in ISD. Her talk is called Progress in Adolescent Vaccination Coverage Levels in the United States. Welcome, Shannon.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to say thank you to all of you for coming today. When I found out we were speaking on the last day at almost the last session, I was worried there might not be anyone here. So I really appreciate you being here today. And just if there's some brave souls in the back, if you want to move closer, I see in the front row in the center here, there's some chocolate on the seats. So there's a little treat too. Okay. So, and I just realized I'm vertically challenged, so I'm trying to see my slides over the podium. Sorry. Okay, so just to give a brief overview of what I'll be talking about today, I'll briefly talk about the National Immunization Survey TEEN, which is the mechanism we use to measure coverage for this country. Also talk about vaccination coverage levels, of course, progress over the 4 years, especially talking about vaccination at the recommended age of 11 and 12, touch on some missed opportunities, and also about HPV vaccine intentions. And just showing here is a timeline of adolescent vaccine recommendations. I'm sure it's familiar to most of you, but really starting in 2005, there was major expansion with the recommended schedule for adolescents. We added new vaccines such as the meningococcal conjugate vaccine, Tdap, and HPV. We also expanded vaccine recommendations, adding a second dose of varicella and annual influenza for all children up through age 18. And then most recently is the meningococcal booster recommendation for adolescents at age 16, which Dr. Kim will be discussing shortly. And then also familiar to most of you, I'm sure, is the recommended schedule. I just want to highlight that the preferred age for vaccination is at age 11 and 12 years, which is shown in the yellow bars. But, of course, we do recommend catch-up vaccination for older adolescents who may have missed the opportunity to be vaccinated when they were 11 and 12. Okay, so moving on to the NIS-TEEN. Again, this is our main survey for measuring coverage in the country. It uses the NIS methodology, so it's a random digit dial telephone survey. We take a national sample of parents of adolescents 13 to 17 years of age. And the strength of the survey is that we do, when consent is given, we go back to the providers to verify the immunization histories of the adolescents. And the survey began in 2006, and the most recent data available is from 2009. And today, all the analysis I'm presenting is limited to those adolescents who had a provider-verified immunization history. And then I also want to note that all of the HPV results that I present are among females only. And so, as I said, the survey started in 2006. In 2006 and 2007, the survey was only conducted during the fourth quarter of the year, so the sample size was somewhat small and we're only able to obtain national estimates. But in 2008, the survey was expanded. Data was collected during all four quarters, and then the sample size was increased so that we could get both state and national estimates. And I'm sure this is a familiar slide to you over the course of the conference. I think if you've been to any of the adolescent workshops, some version of this slide has been presented. But this is the coverage estimates of the most recent year of data available from the 2009 survey. You can see for TD or TDAP, coverage is 76%. When you look at TDAP only, coverage is about 56%, slightly lower for meningococcal conjugate vaccine. Of course, the first dose of HPV is even lower at 44%. And then for receipt of all three doses, it's at 27%. But one thing I do want to note, that among the females who initiated the HPV series and had at least 6 months to complete the series before the interview date, 68% of those females actually did complete the series. And as I mentioned, we are able to obtain state estimates for vaccination coverage. And here is a map showing the distribution of coverage across the states. This is for TD or TDAP. And the main thing I want you to take away from this slide is just that there is great variation in coverage among the states. For TD or TDAP, it ranges from a low of 29% to a high of 94%. And of course, here's the map for meningococcal conjugate vaccine, where coverage ranges from a low of 19% to a high of 78%. And then finally, here is a map for the first dose of HPV, and coverage ranges from a low of 23% to a high of 69%. Okay, and so just to put the results into perspective, here is coverage over time for all 4 years that we have data available. And TDAP is shown in red, meningococcal conjugate vaccine in green, the first dose of HPV is shown in purple, and then all three doses is shown in blue. And we didn't measure HPV coverage in 2006 because that survey was launched just shortly after the vaccine was licensed, so it really wasn't enough time to measure uptake of that vaccine. But you can see with each year, coverage is increasing. But one thing I want to note is that the increase in coverage for HPV between 2008 and 2009 is a little bit less than what we see in the increase for TDAP and meningococcal conjugate vaccine. And this is something that we will continue to monitor. It's not sure if that's just a one-year survey blip or if that will continue to be a trend. But hopefully not. Hopefully it will be increasing at a similar rate as the other vaccines. And again, what I've put at the top of the slide is just the Healthy People 2020 objective. We have new objectives of 80% coverage that we're trying to achieve for all of these vaccines. So you can see we're still a little ways away from reaching those objectives. And shown here is the percent of adolescents who received all vaccines, and really I'm just focusing on the main three vaccines over time. And for males, all vaccines is defined as receiving one dose of TD or TDAP and meningococcal conjugate vaccine. For females, we analyze this two ways. The first set of bars is similar to males, where we're just looking at TD or TDAP and meningococcal conjugate vaccine. And then we also include HPV in the definition. And so when you exclude HPV, you can see males and females are very similar. The coverage is the same. So there's really no differences by gender. And about half the adolescents have received both vaccines, either a tetanus booster and a meningococcal conjugate vaccine. But of course, when you add in HPV for females, coverage does drop. But we are still seeing an increase in coverage over time. And I previously mentioned that our recommended age for the preferred age for vaccination is age 11 and 12 years. And we weren't sure when the vaccines were first introduced, knowing that adolescents don't frequently make preventive visits, would they be coming in at the recommended age to obtain these vaccines? And so looking at the 2009 survey, we did look at vaccination timing, specifically what percent of adolescents actually received their vaccines while they were 11 and 12 years of age. And we looked at this by birth cohort. And these are the cohorts that are included in this survey. And because the survey does include some older adolescents that were not able to get some of these vaccines when they were 11 and 12 because the vaccines were not yet licensed for them, what I've done is placed asterisks on top of that, the first birth cohort that was age 12 at the time of the vaccine being licensed. So you can sort of see you know, coverage before and after the introduction of a vaccine. So just starting with the tetanus booster, prior to Tdap being introduced, TD was recommended at age 11 and 12, but you can see only about a third of the cohort actually received this vaccine at age 11 and 12. So not a lot of vaccination was occurring at the recommended age. And then with the introduction of Tdap, with each new cohort, we're seeing an increase of vaccination at the recommended age, which is very encouraging. And with the youngest cohort in the survey, we see 68% of those teens actually got their tetanus booster at the recommended age. Similarly, with meningococcal and HPV vaccines, we are seeing an increase of vaccination at the recommended age, but it's slightly lower than what we see for Tdap, and especially with HPV, it's lagging behind the other vaccines. I also want to point out that within a cohort, you would hope to see coverage to be around the same level for each vaccine, but we definitely don't see that. Sort of drops off with each vaccine, which suggests missed opportunities may be occurring. And so speaking of missed opportunities, we looked at what coverage could be if all indicated vaccines were administering during existing vaccination visits. So this is not adding additional visits. This is taking advantage of visits that were already occurring. So what could be the maximum coverage we could attain? And when you look at TD, Tdap, and meningococcal conjugate vaccine, coverage could be as high as over 80%. And that would be above our Healthy People 2020 objective. So the potential is there to attain these high coverage levels if all the vaccines were given during the same visit. And with HPV vaccine, at least with initiation, coverage could be as high as 74%. And of course, missed opportunities, no one intentionally wants to create a missed opportunity. Part of it could be that vaccines are not being recommended or parents are not accepting of the vaccine. So in the 2009, or from 2007 to 2009, we asked parents in the survey if they received a provider recommendation for these vaccines. And shown here is the percent of parents who answered yes to these questions. And the way it was worded was, has a doctor or other healthcare professional ever recommended that your teen received this vaccine, where a vaccine was either a tetanus booster, meningitis shot, or HPV shot. And you'll see that there is some increase in parents reporting receiving a provider recommendation, but still for tetanus and meningitis shots, it's less than half. For HPV, we do see more parents remembering or recalling a recommendation, but clearly there's room for improvement here. But we know with infant vaccines that a provider recommendation is very influential and really influences parents to accept vaccines. We also see the same thing here with adolescents. We assess coverage based on whether or not the parent reported having received a vaccine recommendation. And you can see in blue, that's coverage for those who received a recommendation, and in red, that's what the coverage is among the parents who did not report receiving a recommendation. And for each vaccine, coverage is significantly higher among the group that received the recommendation. So clearly recommendations are very important for this population. We also asked about intentions to receive vaccines. In the survey, it's only asked specifically for HPV vaccine. But among the unvaccinated girls, we asked their parents if they intended to have their daughters vaccinated with HPV in the next 12 months. And around 40% were very likely or somewhat likely to have their daughters receive the vaccine, but about 51% were not likely at all to have their daughter vaccinated. And when we asked them why not, their main reasons really were that their daughters were not yet sexually active, a lack of knowledge about the disease or about the vaccine, or that the vaccine was not needed. Less frequently do they mention a lack of recommendation or safety concerns. And I'm sure these reasons are not too unfamiliar to most of you. I think you've probably heard this before. But just to summarize, vaccination coverage is increasing but is below national targets. And of course, there's wide variation among the states. What I am very excited about, though, is vaccination is increasing at age 11 to 12 years. But of course, HPV is somewhat lagging in this area. And there have been studies showing that providers are less likely to strongly recommend this vaccine at this age group, and that parents may be less likely to accept the vaccine at this age, and that they'd rather wait till their daughters are a little bit older. So that may be influencing these results here. Missed opportunities are common, and only about half of the parents are reporting that they received a vaccine recommendation. Now, I'm sure it's probably happening more frequently, but for whatever reason, those recommendations may not be resonating with them. And of course, there's challenges with HPV acceptance. But I know I've shown a lot of data here today, and if there's one thing I hope that you take away is when you go back home and work with your providers and work with your partners, is just really to reinforce the message that recommendations are important. They do influence parents' decisions, and to really encourage providers to make strong recommendations, and also to take advantage of every opportunity. You know, what I showed, what MAC coverage could be, it wasn't about adding visits or doing extra activities. It was administering everything that you can during that same visit. And so really working with providers to really take advantage of every opportunity, especially when the adolescents are there. And so what I'm showing here are just some educational materials CDC has available on their website. And so there are materials that are being improved, and there should be more materials coming soon. But there are a lot of resources for you to help educate parents and providers. Thank you.